Welcome to episode 1 in season 1 of Mysterious Japan. This season examines the history, folklore, and ghost stories of the so-called Suicide Forest. Episode 1 is entitled Origins of a Forest Shrouded in Mystery. Part 1. Paving a forest over the bodies of the dead. The year is 875 CE, approximately 1200 years ago. It is a beautiful May morning. Over 30,000 people live in the villages on the northwest side of Mount Fuji. Nearby, two large lakes and dense forests give them plenty of fish and game. They farm, they hunt, they play. Little do they know, but this day will be their last. The earthquake shakes the ground beneath their feet and sends ripples along the lake. They look to Mount Fuji that houses so many of their gods. For over 60 years, Mount Fuji has not erupted. Their shrines and prayers have satisfied the gods. The animistic beliefs of Shinto and the synthesis of Buddhism means they believe the gods, called kami, inhabit places of particular beauty or significance. But gods can be mollified. Gods can listen to prayers. And over the last 6 decades, the gods have been kind to them. That is about to change. Wispy, smoky fumaroles have drifted constantly from the crater during these last 6 decades, but no eruptions have marked their land. As their gazes rest upon the great mountain, an eruption follows the earthquake. The side of the mountain blows open, exploding ash and molten rock spewed down toward them at 190 meters per second. There is no time to flee. There is no escape. Mothers begin weeping. Children begin screaming. Within minutes, a wall of ash and lava overtake the villages. In a few moments of terror and unbelievable pain, over 30,000 lives end, encased under two giant flows of lava that will flow uninterrupted for 10 days. All around the country, administrative reports record the disaster.
The loud noise was like thunder. Then there were 3 big earthquakes. More than 10 days later, the fire still goes strong. Scorching rocks and crumbling peaks rain down. Smoke and clouds descend. People cannot approach the disaster to help.
Another official report states,
there was a major earthquake before the lake was burnt and filled, and there was thunder and heavy rain. Clouds and ash crept in and shrouded the area in darkness, and we could not distinguish between mountains and fields. Such a calamity has come.
Japan's official history reports the following.
A massive amount of lava flowed down while burning the mountains and fields and flowed into Lake Motosu and Lake Seino Ami. It boiled the water, killing fish and many other things. The farmers were all buried alive.
This becomes the greatest eruption of Mount Fuji in recorded history. Eruptive activity and sporadic earthquakes persist for 2 years following the major eruption. This substrate of lava, measuring hundreds of feet thick in some places, hardens over the bodies of tens of thousands and thus creates the bedrock over which will grow the forest known as Aokigahara Jukai. By comparison to this group of 30,000 buried in lava and ash, when Mount Vesuvius erupted, it is estimated to have buried only 2,000 in Pompeii. This Fuji eruption killed 15 times as many. It takes over 500 years for forest to form over the hard lava. The eruption so quickly enveloped trees and foliage that their decay forms deep lava tubes. Hundreds have been identified, but hundreds more undiscovered caves still exist. Violent emissions of steam from the eruption formed holes all along the forest floor, creating an uneven and disconcerting landscape of potholes that trip the unwary. Sun and stars do not pierce the dense canopy of trees. This creates an optical illusion where the forest appears like the rolling sea, leading to the name Jukai, meaning the Sea of Trees. Another name the Japanese have given Jukai is the Shadowlands of Mount Fuji. The evil held within this forest has led to a phrase in Japan.
The devil clings to the roots of Jukai.
Part 2. Evil in the Forest. Since the 19th century, mothers have pointed at the gnarled trees. They tell their children,
never go in that forest. If you do, you'll never get out. It is a dangerous place. It is an evil place.
For generations, preternatural screams have been heard emanating from Jukai. Their origins are unknown. They are not believed to be human or animal. For generations, local inhabitants tell those who come to visit,
Jukai is the demon forest. It is the realm of demons.
A Buddhist monk named Fuku-i resides in a monastery near Jukai. He speaks about his unique work to reporters.
About 50 monks erected Buddhist altars throughout the forest. Their purpose is to combat evil spirits lingering among the trees. We regularly visit and maintain these altars to keep the area cleansed of evil through our vigilant prayers. If the evil cannot be stopped, then at least we can try to contain it within the forest.
Fuku-i has no doubt that evil dwells in the forest, that evil seeks to lure others to commit evil too.
These spirits are luring people here to kill themselves. And many spirits here are the unsettled souls of those who kill themselves among these trees.
Shōzen Yamashita, another monk who works with Fuku-i, nods vigorously. He says this:
"The spirits of people who committed suicide are calling out to those who visit, urging them to kill themselves too. This happens even in the present day.
Individuals surviving suicide attempts or managing to overcome suicidal thoughts often leave the forest claiming demonic forces drew them there. Some say they felt physically dragged against their will into the trees to die, even after deciding they will not commit suicide. Owners of local restaurants, convenience stores, and inns still warn visitors, especially the unwary, to stay on the main trail. When hiking on the main path leading through the forest, these visitors see placards and roped-off areas warning them to stay on the trail. Other signs prominently tell hikers to treasure their lives. As a preventative measure, these signs provide suicide prevention hotlines. Far too many ignore these warnings, and far too many never return from this forest alive. This is not some horror movie cliche. In Jukai, this is documented fact. For decades, patrols have been pulling over 100 bodies each year from the forest in various states of decay. But this number is only a small and unknown percentage of those who never return from the forest. It is not just because of the suicide victims. Many others fall into one of the countless holes or crevices from within. They cannot extract themselves. They are often injured and eventually starve to death. This is one reason people in the past called the forest Manomori, meaning the devil forest. This is one reason they plead with visitors to always stay on the safe path from outside the entrance to the forest. A Japanese tour guide and nature journalist shakes his head and looks at the camera.
"Look, you simply should not go alone into Jukai. I've reported on this forest for over 20 years. I've been in it over 100 times. Sorry, but I've only gone by myself 3 or 4 times. There are holes everywhere on the ground, ripe for injury if you step in one. Happens all the time, and you'll need hiking boots and at least 2 liters of water. If you can't get out by 4 p.m., you won't get out that night. Sorry, but that's true. The surroundings will be pitch black. The trees, ooh, cover the stars. You won't make it back if you're not on the main trail."
He pauses a moment, looking back at the forest from the parking lot, and then back to the videographer.
"Even now, I never feel comfortable going in there. I don't know why exactly. There's just something that doesn't feel right about it. And the bats are terrible. They come in and out of the caves at night, even though they don't target people. Having them fly around the forest next to your head is disconcerting. The moths are out at night too. They enter the flashlight beams, and then the bats eat the moths. If I am here at night, all of my flashlight sometimes shine on, but just a glimpse, it's moth and a moth. These make him jump every time. No, don't come in here at night. Don't come in here alone. And don't deviate from the main trail."
Part 3. Evil may follow even those who escape. Beyond the physical dangers of the primeval forest, a strongly held belief among the Japanese is that something may attach to those who wander in the forest. It may be something inhuman and evil, or a spirit of a soul trying to escape. Musashi and his wife deviated from the trail, and they believe something followed them back. On their visit, they turn off the main trail and hike into the forest. They make their way through the gnarled roots and twisting trees. The main trail becomes lost far behind them. Throughout the hike, Musashi feels like he is being watched and followed. He feels a presence nearby, but when he looks around, no one is there. He recounts that this dread magnified the more they wandered from the main trail. Then his wife begins to feel it too. At first, she has difficulty breathing. This physical manifestation convinces them to leave the forest and return to the main trail. but his wife falls under a panic attack. She sits down, hyperventilating and reeling with dizziness. They head straight home, but even after returning, she experiences frequent episodes of falling into a trance, becoming unresponsive, and staring straight ahead. She has spans of lost time, unable to remember how she spent her hours. A few nights after they return from Jukai, Musashi wakes up late at night. He glances over the bed to his wife. She is talking in her sleep in a deep voice that is not her own. To him, it sounds demonic in nature, a voice that sends shivers through his body. In this voice, she talks about people they don't know and places they never visited. Musashi feels a heaviness in the air. He feels like some sort of invisible presence stands in their midst. They are not alone, but he doesn't know what he can do. After a time, his wife stops talking in that voice and the room returns to normal. This continues every night for a week. A frightened Musashi dares not wake his wife, afraid of what he might unleash. In the mornings, his wife wakes up unrested, in a malaise, and without energy. Drained is the word that comes to Musashi's mind. His wife has no memory of these late-night incidents and writes it off as troubled sleep and insomnia. Musashi knows better. This is not just troubled sleep, and it is not insomnia. Something wicked followed them out of the forest that day. Finally, he convinces his wife to visit a Shinto priest. Inside the shrine, the priest claps twice. He bows to Musashi's wife while her head is lowered. As the priest rises, in his right hand, he lifts a shaku, a 14-inch long wooden rod that resembles a shoehorn. He moves it ritualistically to the left, right, and then left again. He then begins chanting a solemn liturgy. Bent in a half-bowed stance with shaku raised, he chants in a monotone and steady voice reminiscent of a Gregorian chant. His prayer demands extinction of evil through purification. This is to ensure complete exorcism of any evil that may have attached to the individual. The Japanese trace the origins of the ritual, called harai-e, back to the gods themselves. It is a common cleansing and exorcism ritual in Shintoism. Musashi says,
"After receiving the harai cleansing ceremony, her symptoms stopped. Our lives returned to normal. We did not know exactly what happened, but we both agree on one thing. Something evil followed us out of Jukai and attached to my wife."
Even today, local shop and restaurant owners urge anyone entering Jukai to perform the cleansing ceremony when they exit.
"If you fail to perform harai, you may bring something evil with you from Jukai. It will follow you home."
This warning is often ignored. Many leaving Jukai, like Musashi and his wife, report having a sense that something followed them out of the forest. They often say they feel that a malicious parasitic energy attached itself to them. Some even report that something tried to possess them. Let us now listen to the tale of Momo, much different from Musashi. Momo wishes to withhold her identity to avoid ridicule, but she discusses the unbelievable events that occurred in the late 2010s, a kind of attachment that is not demonic like Musashi, but instead, something ghostly in nature. As a tour conductor, Momo frequently brings tourists to the famous caves in Jukai, such as the Wind Cave and the Dragon Cave. On this occasion, the tour bus stopped in the parking lot at the Wind Cave.
"In the parking lot near the Wind Cave, we saw tents set up. Uniformed workers are bringing things back from the trees and trail. They are wrapped in blue tarps. We immediately recognize them as being the form of bodies. These are body bags." One of the tourists in my group approached a uniformed worker. They explained they are the suicide patrol extracting bodies from the forest. The bodies wrapped in blue tarp are set inside the tents. They will later be shipped out for identification and transportation to the local facilities. The nearby town has a building set up especially for this operation. Rather than visit the Wind Cave, the tourists are fascinated by watching the suicide patrol. Almost the entire busload stands in a line near the tents as the workers parade by them, holding body bags. I also stood with them. As they carried one of the tarp-wrapped bodies past my group of gawking tourists, I heard a voice, as though carried on the wind. It said, "Take me. Take me with you too." The tourists all gasped. I did too. We all heard the voice, not just Momo. The tourists suddenly started looking at each other and saying, "Did you hear what I just heard?" This experience rattled them, and they decide to return to the tour bus and head back to Tokyo. Darkness was settling over us behind the trees, and we just pile into the bus and skip the wind cave. Everyone is quiet, both from exhaustion and the disconcerting experience of the voice. Though it was summer, we felt a chill come over us. A few minutes later, while the bus is still driving in the heart of Jukai, I hear a woman scream from the back of the bus, followed almost immediately by gasps and panic from the passengers. I think one of the passengers must have fallen down and hurt herself. I quickly spin around to check on the passengers. But instead of an injured tourist, I see something else. I can't believe what I see. The apparition of a woman stands in the aisle at the back of the bus. The ghostly woman is dressed in white with long black hair draping her white dress and covering most of her face. The part of her face I can see is a blurry haze. She starts to glide up the center of the aisle. The passengers also turned when the ghost initially screamed. Upon seeing the spirit floating forward down the aisle, they scream themselves. Everyone is screaming and yelling. The bus is in an uproar. The bus driver nearly crashes, especially after he glances up at the rearview mirror and sees the apparition approaching the front of the bus. The terrified passengers press themselves up against the windows as if the ghost carries the plague. Their eyes are wide and mouths agape as the ghost moves forward. That's when I see that the ghost is talking. Its words are ethereal yet persistent. "Take me, please. Take me with you too.
Take me.
I am so shocked. I'm just thinking to myself, take her where? Where does she want to go? What does she want from us? All I can think of to answer those questions is that this ghost wants to escape Jukai. By now, the bus driver has pulled the bus over. He leans back against the window. His hands shake and he cannot take his eyes off the figure as it nears the front of the bus. As we all watch, some screaming, some hiding their eyes in their hands, the apparition walks to the front of the bus. As the tour conductor, I am in the front row across from the bus driver. The ghostly figure steps directly through the front of the bus. As it does so, it says, "Take me. I am tangled in the sea of trees."
"Take me. I am tangled in the sea of trees."
Then the apparition disappears just outside the front of the bus.
Momo later relays this frightening story to an elderly bus driver she often works with, expecting a laugh. Instead, he turns to her and tells her his own story from Jukai.
"This happened in broad daylight, just a couple years ago, when I was 60. I pulled my bus into a parking lot at one of the tourist spots in Jukai. After the tourists walked off, I saw a young girl playing with a ball in the middle of the parking lot right where buses and vans are coming and going. I think to myself, that's dangerous. I pushed the girl, who couldn't be over 6 or 7 years old. I said, 'Little girl, you can't play there. It's dangerous. Come here.' When she reaches me, I lean down and ask her, 'Where is your mother?' She points to a woman on a bench and says, 'Over there.' The woman on the bench wears a white dress. Her long black hair is draped over her shoulders and obscuring her face as she peers into a cell phone. 'Okay,' I say, 'let's take you to your mom.' I lead her to the bench across the parking lot. 'Excuse me, mom,' I said. The mother ignored me. She was tapping her phone. 'Sorry,' I say a little louder, 'but isn't this your daughter?' Without looking up, the woman keeps tapping at her phone. After a pause, she finally says, 'Yes. What about it?' Now, I am getting upset with her. She's not even looking up at me. So disrespectful. I tell her she was playing alone in a dangerous part of the parking lot. Her mother still did not look up. She still just tapped at her phone. 'So what?' she responds. I tell her in a loud voice, 'It's dangerous. The anger rose because of her ambivalence.' I said, 'A child this small could easily be hit by the buses that can't see her. Don't you think a mother has a responsibility to keep her out of dangerous situations? The mother finally stops tapping her phone. Then, still looking down, she yells in anger, as if she's angry with the world.
There's something you don't understand, old man.
After this outburst, she lifted an arm and pointed to the buses.
That child was already hit by the bus. She is dead.
I yell out, what? What are you talking about? Then I look down at the girl, only to find that she has mangled limbs and her face is covered in blood with a blank expression. She's no longer solid in form, but appears as a translucent apparition. As I scream and back away, the young girl says,
"Thank you, I like you."
Then she disappears, right in front of me. I am freaked out, so I turn around to run. But now the mother is standing and looking straight at me. Her hair has finally parted to show her face, with deep-set eyes and a rope-like scar around her neck. She also appears as a ghost. She angrily yells at me.
You killed my daughter.
No, I respond. You're mistaken. I am backing up slowly from this spirit. It is getting angry. I can feel its emotion building. I say, it wasn't me. Then I turn and run toward the bus, but I can hear her following behind me. She's yelling,
"You give me back my daughter!"
I run faster. I can feel myself blustering out in tears of terror. She keeps right behind me, yelling, "Give me back my daughter!" I'm breathing hard when I reach the bus. I lean over to catch my breath, and when I turn around to face the angry spirit, no one is there. Instead, I see that a bus has just pulled into the place where the girl had been playing with a ball just a few minutes earlier. The young driver of that bus is in a panic. He looks under the bus, calling out, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" But as his eyes scan the undercarriage of the bus, he sees no one there. "That's so strange," he says to the passengers who clamber out of the door and stand behind him. "There's no one here. I swear I saw her. I thought I hit her. But he must have hit the ghost of the little girl."
The elderly bus driver tells Momo that he believes the girl was killed in this parking lot by a bus or car. He thinks the distraught mother killed herself in Jukai and will be forever cursed to search for the culprit who ran over her little girl. That's what would explain the rope-like scar around her neck. As a ghost filled with anger, she may just seek to follow anyone out of the forest who she thinks may be to blame, or she may relive this scene over and over. The Japanese call this an onryo, or grudge spirit. The tale of Momo and the elderly bus driver was featured in an episode of TV Tokyo. The events were recreated and their identities kept confidential. They feel they may be ridiculed if they reveal themselves, but they swear their stories are true, and they have gained no notoriety or pay for relating their tale. Part 4. A Forest of Tengu and Jibakurei. To many Japanese, Jukai is the most powerful paranormal spot in Japan, a place of spiritual and supernatural evil, and a place where oni demons and akuma devils roam freely and where tortured spirits are forced to remain forever. They believe in human entities, called Tengu, roam at the tops of trees in Jukai. Tengu are entrenched in the ancient Japanese psyche. These half-bird, half-humanoid entities existed at the base of Mount Fuji even before the eruption. Beyond the accursed status of the forest, Tengu are also believed to be gatekeepers monitoring the passage connecting Jukai to Mount Fuji. Some believe shadow figures they see are the Tengu watching. Descriptions of Tengu vary and have evolved significantly in popular culture. Most ancient accounts describe them as humanoid in form, but having wings and a long bird-like beak or nose. Their hands and feet are said to end in long talons or sharp claws. They are spectral beings with avian characteristics, believed to be bird-like demons that can morph into human form. The Tengu reign as territorial beings. They do not appreciate the intrusion of strangers. When they feel their territory is threatened, they reveal themselves. They may appear in peripheral vision or in blurry sights of things flying among the trees, often moving from the top of one tree to the top of another. This is what many in Jukai report seeing. The Tengu are often known to emit blood-curdling screams of warning. Modern-day visitors report hearing these unnerving and bizarre screams in Jukai. Some even claim to have captured those screams on audio. If the intruders remain despite the screams and momentary sightings, the Tengyu may engage them in a physical confrontation. No one survives to describe what the Teng do in these confrontations. But as the Tengyu are considered the strongest physically of all inhuman entities, humans do not have a chance against them. Others claim that these screams are not Tengyu at all, but are instead the screams of lingering spirits that can be traced to Jibakure. In the belief of Jibakure, spirits suffering violent deaths are bound to the place of their death, and their souls are cursed to stay there forever, a place neither living in the world nor moving on to the next. A Buddhist monk explains,
"In the Middle Ages, there was Mugen Jigoku, an in-between place where individuals could not go to hell because of their study of Buddhism or to paradise because of their evil actions."
In this in-between place is a realm called Tengdu, or alternatively, Ma Do. This is a realm ruled by demons, such as Tengul or devils, called Akuma. And this is the realm where tormented souls must stay to relive their deaths tens of thousands of times in an endless torment. Thus, Mugen Jigoku, which literally means eternal hell, earns its name because these souls are stuck for eternity in their state of despair reliving their ultimate sin. And in Jukai, this ultimate sin is usually suicide. In this way, Jukai, through becoming a forsaken place of Tetari, and by way of so much suffering over the centuries, has overlapped into the Tengyu Do, where devils and entities like the Tengyu have power. And souls remain in torment, unable to move on. This convergence with the human realm, so the belief goes, allows contact with entities, trapped spirits, and people in the human realm. And thus, the screams in the forest are attributed to Tengyu entities or the souls stuck in Jibakure to linger as spirit. In either case, the Tengu or spirits are believed to be luring people to the corpses of those who died there, and in many cases, it is believed they are trying to tempt visitors to kill themselves. Even today, visitors frequently report catching a glimpse of dark movements in their peripheral vision, things moving among the trees. In recent decades, drivers along the roads bordering the forest often report seeing figures in the trees. And from inside the forest, visitors report acorns flying at them from the trees. These acorns do not merely fall. They are hurled at great velocity. The acorns pop with unnatural momentum as they crack against rocks and the trunks of trees. These and other mischievous events are blamed on Tengyu. While the folklore surrounding the Tengu can be neither proved nor disproved, these beliefs are entrenched in the religious psyche of Japanese entering Jukai. They believe the forest harbors demons or spirits that have sinister intent. Though Tengu are the most common, other dark entities are believed to exert malignant influence on those who linger, the Akuma entities, which are generally translated as devils in English. Japanese spiritualists take it a step further. They claim that the twisted trees of Jukai trap malicious energies accumulated throughout the centuries. In 2011, Japan Times reporter Rob Gilhooly journeyed into the forest to research an article about Jukai. During his visit, he heard unnatural and blood-curdling screams. Thinking that someone may be committing suicide, he ran over to the place where the screams had come from. Instead of finding a person in the throes of pain, he found a body. At first, it looked like a pile of clothes, but as he approached, he saw that it was a decaying corpse tucked into the fetal position. With thinning gray hair and no shirt on, the corpse wore only black long john leggings and gray wool socks. A jacket and white shirt were spread out as a pillow or cushion under the body, and the area was littered with various accoutrements. Briefcase, documents, prescription pill bottles, beer cans, and liquor bottles. These all unveiled the chaos of the poor man's former life. But Gilhooly was confused. The screams could not have come from this man. The corpse had been decaying for quite some time, yet he knew the screams had come from this spot. Now, as he stood there and looked down at the body, the area was empty and silent. Could he have been lured there by a Tengyu, or by the spirit of this man caught in the Jibakure state being unable to pass on? Part 5. Lingering Spirits. The concept of Jibakure is taken very seriously in Japan. It is not some mere folklore or superstition. Jibakure persists to this day and is incorporated into the process of removing the 100+ corpses extracted from Jukai each year. Buddhist tradition guides treatment of the bodies. This is where Jibakure comes into play. police treat remains of suicide victims as unsettled souls bound to this world. Similar to the last rites of the Catholic religion, Japanese Buddhism has death rites called Rinju Gyogi. These are necessary to release the soul from this earth. Failure to receive Rinju Gyogi may result in the soul being bound to the area near the body, particularly for sudden or violent deaths. In other words, Jibakurai forms the roots of belief affecting the disposal of bodies. When removing a body, 6 to 8 investigators load it in a body bag. 4 investigators haul out the body to the main trail on a stretcher fitted with shoulder straps at each corner. At the trail, they load the body bag onto a 2-wheeled handcart covered in plastic sheeting. They push this back to the parking lot for final transport. Police prefer the bodies to be fresh. Yes, you heard that right. The corpses are easier to remove that way. One officer says,
"Rotten corpses are difficult to carry and clean up. Fresh remains allow the investigators to closely search for signs of trauma or foul play. Hanging is automatically treated as a suicide unless there is some evidence suggesting otherwise."
When they find only bones, 2 or 3 investigators collect them in plastic bags. A complete skeleton weighs 25 to 35 pounds. This is a fact the patrols know all too well. An on-site investigation usually lasts just 10 to 15 minutes, unless there is some evidence or reason to stay longer. During that time, investigators search for identification or a means to identify the body. Only about 1/3 of the bodies are identified. Even tooth samples and DNA are useless because there is no way to index them and no database to search for matches. For bodies discovered in the afternoon or later, police leave them overnight before summoning the investigators. The forest is too dangerous after dark. On the other hand, if they find someone alive, police immediately engage in rescue operations regardless of the danger or time of day. This procedure happens so frequently that police no longer use formal witness reports for those who find the bodies. Police openly admit the disconcerting nature of bringing back remains. After recovering a body, police first transfer the bodies to the police station. Once processed, the remains are placed in a customized storage room. Death in Jukai is so common that the city had to erect a special storage area to hold remains retrieved from Jukai. Inside this storage room are 2 beds and 2 lounge chairs. The remains are placed respectfully in a bed until completion of the investigation and proper procedures. How long this lasts will depend on whether the remains are identified or remain anonymous. At the start of each day, police play the Japanese version of rock, paper, scissors called Jankinpon to determine who among them will take the night shift. The loser must spend the night guarding the corpses. This is not for security. It is not for a legal reason. It relates back to Jibakurai and the death rituals called Rinju Gyogi. Under Buddhist beliefs, if a body is moved without receiving the death rituals to release its spirit to the next life, the unsettled spirit will fly around the room screaming that the body must be returned to its place of death. The spirit will try to enter the body and force the body to return to the site of its death. The body might move on its own, wandering zombie-like to obey the spirit that formerly inhabited it. Having someone stand vigil overnight is a way to prevent this. Police honor this tradition out of respect for the departed souls. Even those police officers who do not hold to the traditional beliefs still think it is bad luck to leave the body of a suicide victim alone overnight. They believe this may bring bad karma to the spirit of the deceased. The police officer pulling night shift must sit in the lounge chair all night and all alone with any bodies brought to the storage room. Though the bodies are inside body bags, decomposition may permeate the room with the putrid stench of death. Fresh corpses can bloat or release gases, and this may create startling noises like groans and squeaks as gases move through the windpipes. If the corpse is fresh enough, the body may still be capable of twitching or flexing under the sheets. When these things happen, not surprisingly, the officer on duty often becomes alarmed and filled with superstitious dread. Many report a sense of fight or flight when this happens. Others do whatever they can to avoid this shift. When pulling this graveyard shift to end all graveyard shifts, the officer may try to distract himself by reading a book or using his cell phone, but it is never a relaxing or peaceful shift, and officers often fall asleep next to the bodies, hoping this does not interrupt the vigil. Many officers admit being genuinely frightened during this shift. If identification is made, then the process can be quick and the families can take the remains. But in many cases, there is no identification. and sometimes all they have are skeletal remains. In these cases, authorities catalog as many identifying features as possible, like gender, height, and distinguishing marks. Then they relocate the bodies to the local government, where they are cremated and interred at a local Buddhist ashram. Nearby residents, as the responsible taxpayers in the area, bear the cost of disposing unidentified bodies. The cost is over 100,000 yen per body to transport, cremate, and enshrine the ashes. This budgetary cost annoys the municipalities, and they say, in all seriousness,
"If you really want to die in Jukai without being identified, please make an anonymous donation of 100,000 yen to the town office to cover costs first."
The sheer volume of human remains burdened the graveyard so much that the ossuary had to be expanded. It simply lacked the capacity to hold that many bones. Even now, the ossuary overflows with the remains of those never identified. These people also never received their final rites of death, and it is not known if they can rest in peace. As for the thousands or tens of thousands of souls still trapped in Jukai, they may never find rest. One last vignette for this episode. Filmed on site in Jukai, the 2021 horror film Jukai Mura exploits many of the Japanese folklore beliefs about Jukai. While filming, the cast and crew encountered something strange in a scene shot in the forest. A noise, possibly a scream, can be heard, followed by something inexplicable showing up on their monitor screens, which they believed was a spirit. The film crew was terrified, believing that the powerful curse of Jukai was trying to interfere with their filming. In interviews, some cast members claim that a spirit seems to come out on film on several occasions and can be seen in the movie if people look closely. Skeptics dismiss this as a publicity stunt. Regardless, many others report catching ghosts or entities on video or audio. Jukai has become a hotspot for paranormal investigations. To battle the stain of Tatari and cleanse it of evil, early Buddhist monks decided to take action in one of the most bizarre and gruesome ways imaginable. We explore that and more in Episode 2 of Mysterious Japan.
This has been Mysterious Japan, created, written, and translated by Heath Havey. Thank you for listening and making this podcast possible. Please visit our website at www.themysteriousjapan.com for more information. Please join us next time as we continue to explore the dark histories and strange mysteries of Japan.